You are listening to High Plains Morning on member-supported High Plains Public Radio. Right now on the program, I am thrilled to have Travis Langley on the line. Travis is going to be hosting a talk in Amarillo this Thursday night. That's March 29th, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. in the Hazelwood Lecture Hall at Panhandle Plains Historical Museum. That is, of course, on the WT campus if you're in the Panhandle area in Canyon. And the topic is the psychology of superheroes. You might have seen our very cool neon pink poster flying around town, and that is what we're talking about right now. And this is part of the WTAMU Distinguished Lecture Series. And Travis, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thanks so much for spending some time and sharing your time with the folks of the High Plains. Obviously, we're at the southernmost tip of our listener region, so I like to try to get folks on here and tell us all the cool stuff for those that are too far of a drive from WT to check out the Distinguished Lecture Series. And I know you're traveling all week, as you are commonly traveling to comic cons and lectures. So thanks again for spending a little time for the folks of the High Plains.
It's funny to me in some ways hearing what I do referred to as some of the cool stuff, having grown up back when Fonzie on Happy Days was telling everybody that, you know, nerds were the worst thing to be.
Well, you know, that's really shifted. Nerds are kind of the coolest thing to be now.
And here I am. I'm making my living doing nerdy stuff.
Well, I have to say, like, nerds have gotten very cool, and this makes me very happy because I wasn't quite a nerd. I mean, I look back and it was like, superheroes. To me, it was like the nerds versus geeks kind of thing, the people that were really into comic books and people that were collectors and super, super hardcore about like the details of things, and just like people that kind of had social anxiety and didn't really connect with others. They kind of delved into these worlds. Is that what you find?
A wide range of it. When I was a kid and the first Star Wars movie was so incredibly successful, that sent a message to me that there are many, many people interested in what you think of as nerdy things. Plenty of people that no one would think of as a nerd. So it's an oversimplified word.
Absolutely. Now, you are a psychology professor at Henderson State University. That is in Arkadelphia, Arkansas.
Correct.
Which sounds like another realm of a distant planet for superheroes, if you ask me. And you are the author of several volumes of the Pop Culture Psychology series. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I am the sole author of the book Batman and Psychology, A Dark and Stormy Night, because if you're going to write about the psychology of a superhero and his enemies, you start with Batman.
Excellent.
And it's a very popular book. It has stayed popular every single week that it has been out for some time now. And after its immediate success, other nerdy psychologists, other psychologists with nerdy interest, might put it that way, would say, you know, if you do more of these books, we would like to get involved in these. So the more recent books, looking at things such as The Walking Dead and Game of Thrones and Doctor Who and Captain America versus Iron Man, Freedom Security Psychology, and the TV show Supernatural, we have trauma experts talking about trauma, child development experts talking about what it's like growing up, family dynamics experts, so different people doing different things, such as Dr. Pat O'Connor, who in The Walking Dead Psychology, he compared working with neglected kids and how they essentially have to raise themselves. He compared that to Carl in The Walking Dead, who has often had to raise himself, especially when Rick has been more distant mentally, to put it mildly.
Mm-hmm.
And so through this filter of fiction, we get to talk about anything we want. People often have a more limited sense of what psychology means than what it really does. It's not just what happens in your mind. It's everything you do, everything you love, everything you hate, your feelings, your activities. That is all of psychology. It's not just about mental illness. It's about mental health. It's about what is normal, not just abnormal. It covers so many different things, and we can go through these different areas. When I was contemplating working on a Wonder Woman book, it took me a bit to think, it's like, now how am I going to do this? Because when I did Batman, people had no trouble understanding why I would write about Batman. He has issues. With Wonder Woman, we're looking at a mentally healthy hero, but she was created by a psychologist. So I thought, well, if we start with his perspective in psychology and how that relates to stories, and then use her to talk about the psychology of healthy characteristics in people, we actually made that the longest book in the series yet because we had so much to say. So when I teach a forensic psychology class or a class on mental illness, so many of the topics can be very unpleasant, and the unpleasant nature of talking about real people suffering can be a bit of a turnoff and make it hard for the person to listen to the point I'm making. Or if you're talking about other things from real life, the predispositions you have, the attitudes you already have, if you're going to talk about gun violence, you immediately have existing predispositions, attitudes about it that figure into looking at a particular issue, looking at a particular event. But when we go through this filter of fiction, you can take a step aside from your immediate emotional reaction or your predispositions. I can talk about the things we've learned about children who've lost their parents to crime. It's happened so often, we do have a body of information about that. But I can use it through the example of Batman or characters in The Walking Dead or the Game of Thrones, and people stay with me. They get what I'm saying. And so fiction can often help us take a better look at truth and reality than just cold, hard, supposed facts will.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned deceased parents, because obviously that's a recurring theme. But I also want to kind of circle back. Obviously, Batman, Wonder Woman, these are superheroes that we know of. Star Wars, sure, the Force could be considered a superhero. Now, The Walking Dead, which I have watched, isn't necessarily superheroes. It's just people acting kind of like beyond what you'd think a human would be able to handle, given the adversarial life and post-apocalyptic thing that they're dealing with. But Game of Thrones, I'm saving that for when I probably get cancer, as we all will. And I haven't watched it yet. I'm saving it so I have something to look forward to while I recover from some future disease that I surely will get. So I know there are dragons in it. Is that superheroes per se, or is that more like...
About half the books they do have to do with comic book characters.
I see.
Although they're more popularly known usually through film and television.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half on characters in other forms of fantastic fiction, whether it's The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones. But regardless of which one you're talking about, these particular things I'm naming, they're popular with so many people because the humanity of the character is what's true. So something such as The Walking Dead or Star Trek or the others, we're still looking at what brings out the best and worst people. There's heroism in all of them. There's villainy in the stories in every single one of these. And that runs throughout of them. One way or another, issues of what brings out the best and worst in people in a variety of situations figures into everything that we've been writing about. And something such as The Walking Dead. There are a lot of combat veterans who have mentioned that The Walking Dead makes it easier for some of the people in their lives to take a step back from their assumptions about things like PTSD and reconsider and have a different dialogue about it. Also, there are, sticking with the combat veteran example, many of them are people suffering other tragedies and horrible things in life. People can't always discuss the worst things that have happened to them personally, but they could discuss the same thing through a fictional character and still get a benefit from that. Likewise, looking at the best of behavior, when you read about a character stepping up and doing the right thing, at an emotional level, there's something of a mental rehearsal. And it's been shown through a lot of research that people who read a lot of fiction show more empathy toward real people. They've gotten experience getting inside the heads of these characters. So there are a lot of ways in which fiction can help bring out the best of us.
Yeah, I think there's some quote, I'm going to totally butcher it, but it's something about people who are writers tell lies so that they can find the truth, something like that. There's definitely something there when it comes to superhero fiction. Now, why do you think it's become so important? There's just such an influx of, you know, like you said, movies, television that focuses on superheroes, Marvel and DC. Why do you think it's been so important in these last recent decades?
Well, it's a very difficult world that we're in. When the superheroes first emerged at the end of the 30s, it was a difficult time. People had come out of the Great Depression. People had seen the gangsters overrunning cities, and the police did not seem to be affected. And it was very difficult for people to see what was going to solve the problems of the world they were in as they were heading toward World War II. But they could imagine someone doing something fantastic, whether it's a super-powered individual like Superman or someone making a bizarre choice on how to step up and be the rebel hero like Batman. It would take somebody doing something very unusual to solve things in the worst of situations. And the world we're in, we've had this age of communication for decades now, and now we've got social media. We've got 24/7 instant news on many different channels, and makes it even harder for people to see real-life heroes and harder to see who can possibly, you know, help us in this complicated world we're in. And I think that's part of the pop current popularity of these fantastic heroes. And of course, in the 21st century, we have CGI making it possible to see them doing things that we could not have seen before. But there's a long history in the publishing industry showing that fantastic fiction, science fiction and fantasy, sell better when the economy is worse. They sell better during times of extreme crisis, such as war. People need, some need escape, but many, they don't want to escape reality. They want to look at reality, but not quite as bluntly. Max Brooks, who wrote the book that World War Z, is the movie is based on.
Which is a zombie graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He commented in discussing this endless question of why the zombie stories were popular, that we all want to know the end game. We want to know where the world is heading, and we want to know what it takes to deal with other people in the worst of situations. And if you watch a movie about a worldwide plague wiping people out, that's very unpleasant, and you can't just ride with it like an adventure, and you're not going to be able to sleep well at night. But if you watch a movie about a zombie outbreak and see things falling apart, and as he put it, and the president's flying over going, well, that's peculiar, and you can still look at some of the same issues that concern you, but without doing it as bluntly in terms of looking at real life. So most of us are looking at real life through these things.
Now, the zombie thing, aside from superheroes, because the whole zombie thing, I think some people can get with it, you know, some people cannot. It's everywhere right now. So obviously, I think a lot of people have somehow ingested some of the zombie stuff. But as far as superheroes goes, mm-hmm. I find those pretty darn different. But superhero movies of the past, like I grew up with Star Wars, I grew up with the first Superman, the Christopher Reeve one. It seemed a little more cut and dry back then, where they were just undeniably good and virtuous, and they had this opposing force. And today, it seems like the superhero movies that are coming out in the last like 20 years, say, these are definitely more morally complex. Of course, Batman would be a perfect example, the Dark Knight. Why do you think that is, that we're seeing more of the complications within their psychology?
It gets harder for people to believe the overly simplified character, because of many of the reasons that I already mentioned. If you read a news story about someone doing something heroic, there are immediately all kinds of people out there who are available to pick out everything that person's ever done wrong in his or her entire life, and it gets harder to see the heroes as being a pure representation of heroes as we used to. And so it also gets harder to see the overly simplified heroes in those older stories. You don't necessarily need to have a lot of complexity, but you do need more complexity. Captain America is presented as being, you know, the true blue. He very genuinely is that good, and yet he's still making some tough decisions. He's struggling with, like, you know, do I follow these rules? Do I break these rules for the greater good?
Yeah, and I know that there was a recent movie, I didn't see it all the way through. I think I caught parts of it, but I think it was Civil War, maybe, and it was Captain America was the main character, and he basically like went against all the other superheroes to just kind of get the back of his childhood friend.
That's one way of it. Well, the heroes were evenly divided over, do we go along with what the government tells us we have to do, or do we decide to step up and do the right thing? It's a lot of people will find it easier to step up and do the right thing when it follows the rules. The more difficult part is to, and often it's the definition of a hero, that the hero will be the one who will do the right thing when it's not easy, when it's not even necessarily approved of, or following the rules. They will do the right thing because it is the right thing to do. The person who helps hide individuals from the Nazis is breaking rules. They are doing the right thing when it is hard, when it is not following the rules, because that's what the person ought to do. And that's the philosophy that Captain America is following. And it's a common philosophy to the superhero story. The superheroes first appear as rebel heroes, and then bit by bit over the years, you have to tame it up, you know, in the McCarthy era. It's like, okay, they need to be deputized and working with the police. And especially since a particular point in the mid-80s, we've wanted to see greater complexity in these characters.
Yeah, and You know, it's funny, like nowadays we're seeing a lot of protests. We're seeing a lot of like using our First Amendment rights. And some people are like, that's what America's built on. That is what, you know, that is what this country is. If you're not protesting, if you're not, you know, challenging the government, that's the whole basis of this country. Whereas you've got other people who are under, you know, some say it's like, that's not patriotic to do. So it is interesting, like looking back at things like Star Wars, where it's like, these were the rebels. And then we're hearing about all these, you know, conflicts right now. This is an NPR affiliate station. We hear about it all the time on the news, about rebels and rebel forces versus governments. And it's just those blurred lines, like very complicated right now.
Yeah, and a funny thing with the Star Wars example is that they repeatedly seem to oversimplify things. They're talking about the light side and the dark side. And yet you watch, it repeatedly shows that things are more complicated than that, that there are other shades of individuals that... Honestly, I think one of the lessons of Star Wars is to look past the surface. The damsel in distress has to take over her own rescue because those guys don't know what they're doing. The rogue who says he won't stick his neck out for anybody does. The big scary monster who supposedly rips out arms is the most nurturing character of all. The deadliest killers are the teddy bears. And Luke wins the day in the original trilogy because he has hope. He sees something beyond that dark surface. He sees something else in this other individual.
And then they wrecked it with Jar Jar Binks.
Well, that's something.
I know, polarizing topic, right? You travel a lot to Comic Cons. You deal with these people who they make their life's work to sit and come up with a lot of different, you know, opinions and unraveling the psychology of some of this stuff. Can you share with us maybe a good anecdote or a witnessed interaction from a Comic Con? I have attended a Comic Con. My second boyfriend in high school was a comic book collector, so I've witnessed it. I even went to the Anime Central, so I've seen the types of hijinks that go on at these things and some of the incredible costumes. Give us a little a hot take of something that you've seen at a Comic-Con that you'd like to share.
Of course, the majority of people who've never been to them think there are more costumes than there actually are because we're all there taking photos of the costumes. The very first time I went to San Diego Comic-Con 11 years ago, I saw people in this environment that was celebrating interests that they might feel ostracized for elsewhere in life. And it looked to me like they were probably livelier in this setting than elsewhere. So the following 2 years, I took groups of students and we did surveys. It was before everybody in line was staring into their phones constantly, when we could still give paper forms and get surveys done, and included personality tests, set measuring things such as optimism about life and self-esteem, and found that people in those settings showed much higher self-esteem there than 2 months later when we contacted them and they did the survey again when they were at home in that setting that did not celebrate that part of themselves and where they might have to hide that piece. Different people get different things out of it. I was at a convention a couple of years ago where there was this interviewer who was dressed as Poison Ivy interviewing me. And while we're talking, there was this girl dressed as Deadpool. I wasn't sure at the point, are we talking girl or woman? I wasn't sure yet. And stood there standing while we were doing the interview, and as soon as it was over, she came up and she showed me that she'd been carrying a copy of my Batman book around the entire convention. It had gotten battered a bit. There was a comic book writer who'd signed a page in it for her. She was hoping she would cross paths with me because she said that that book had been so meaningful to her personally that she wanted to get a chance to tell me this. And messages like that, I had a woman who sent me a message. She wanted to let me know that one particular thing I said toward the end of Star Wars Psychology, this comment I made that, you know, the other great lesson of Star Wars may simply be that there is never only one hope. And she said that was exactly what she needed to hear while she was dealing with her dying father. That was what she needed at that point in her life.
That's nice. That's great. I love that. Because, you know, that's who didn't grow up with Star Wars? I mean, that show has not stopped. I mean, I remember that was one of the first memories I have is I think I was like 3 or 4 and we went and saw it in the theater. And man, they're still coming out.
Yep.
It's crazy.
I always knew there would be more. I actually wanted to do the Star Wars book much earlier, but back at the time the publisher said, well, there's no new movies coming. I was like, one, there will be sooner or later. And two, so what? Star Wars always sells.
Yeah.
So when The Force Awakens had been announced, I was like, you remember that Star Wars book I wanted to do? It is time. And that time they agreed.
Yeah.
Now, some people will look at these and think, oh, you're just writing about this stuff because it's popular. It's no. We got our three criteria. One, is it interesting to us? Two, do we think we can have real psychology, real messages about human nature to say about these things? And then three, what will the publisher let us do?
And that's quite important. Otherwise, you'll be self-publishing. Just a heads up, the local media has encouraged attendees to your talk on Thursday to get into character and come dressed as your favorite superhero. And I'm just wondering, will you be wearing tights?
I had contemplated, but I decided not to.
Okay. All right. Well, that I'm just going to go ahead and encourage anyone who is attending, definitely wear tights. And finally, last question, I asked a couple friends who are into superhero movies, you know, suggestions like for, you know, what we should discuss. And they said, just get him to admit that Black Panther was indeed mediocre. Thoughts?
You're talking to the wrong people. I love Black Panther.
I loved Black Panther also.
I love that movie so much.
But you know, you get into, you know, people that are just like film critics and they just rip it to shreds.
Well, it's like if they didn't care for it, that's fine. As long as they have things that they do enjoy and that they do can, they are able to get. The ones who don't like anything, it's like those are the ones that, you know, I feel sad for.
No, I think they do like lots of things. I think that it's what ruins it is the hype where it's like, well, wait, what about this? What about this? What about this? And it's like, my opinion to that is fair enough. But hey, it was really enjoyable.
Yeah.
My favorite moment of that is when I was watching it. It was the opening, one of the opening scenes when the son goes and looks out the young Forrest Whitaker character looks out the door. Hope I'm not spoiling anything. It's at the beginning of the movie, but he says, who's at the door? And it's, oh, these three Grace Jones looking women. And my friend leans over and says, who's Grace Jones? And I went, I'll tell you in a minute. And that's a whole other story.
But it was appropriate for the time that scene was set in.
Oh, absolutely perfect. It was perfect.
And then a wonderful trick with that scene is that it's not the people you think are telling the story.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was great. Loved it. The rhinoceros. Best part. All right. Well, finally, if you have any favorite superhero songs, I would love to do an outro from this interview.
A superhero song?
Got any favorites?
Nobody wants to hear me sing.
Oh, I don't mean sing it. I can pull it and we can play it.
Oh well, let's go with the Spider-Man classic Spider-Man theme.
Okay, well,
I mean, I'll be talking about Batman more, but you know, there's that old Spider-Man. I mean, that's a fun one.
Okay, I'm gonna pull the Spider-Man. Yeah. Travis, thank you so much for taking time and sharing your insight on the psychology of superheroes, folks. If you're in the Amarillo or Canyon area, check it out Thursday night, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Hazelwood Lecture Hall, Panhandle Plains Historical Museum. That is just off the WT campus in Canyon. Travis, thank you so much, and have a fantastic talk.
Thank you.
All right.